Green and blue opaque bubbles spiral and form a helix. Joined by fluid streaks, the helix morphs into a glimmering purple paintbrush stroke that settles into an orange and yellow colour, the logo for Screen Australia. A 30-something dark-haired man hurries down a narrow staircase and rushes out into a sunlit sloping alley in a town in Italy. Dressed in shorts and a white shirt, he runs down a cobbled street. Taking out his wallet from his shorts, he stops beside a public phone hung on the wall of a house. An old bald man sitting in a blue doorway rests his cheek on his walking stick and watches as Tim Conagrave makes a phone call. Dropping coins into the slot, Tim flicks through the pages of a small notebook, then dials. A phone rings in a dark house in Melbourne.
Hi, you've called Peppy Trevor. Leave a message after the total.
Yes, hello?
I can't remember where he sat.
Tim, you okay?
Where was John?
Do you know where John is?
At our dinner party with the girls.
Was he opposite or beside me?
Nah, doesn't matter.
I'm trying to write it down, and I...
There were mint leaves in our drink, and I remember the colour of your dress, but I can't remember... Remember where he sat.
And it frightens me. It's like I'm going to lose it.
He was...
Peppy. Peppy?
Trying to reconnect the call, Tim hangs up and rummages in his pocket. He pulls out a crumpled denomination. He frantically looks around and begins walking down the street.
Cambio? Cambio.
A couple of elderly men sitting on a bench laugh at him. The bald man in the doorway watches as Tim runs down a cobbled side street. He emerges into a public square by the sea. Leaving a wad of rolled-up postcards stuffed into his shoe on the beach beside his shirt, Tim dives into the water. Tim swims away from the shore, the small town of Lipari cradled below a hill behind him. After a while, he floats face down in the water, then turns over and inhales deeply.
Dear John, Lipari is paradise. I seem to be doing many of the things I want to do before I die.
Floating on his back, Tim looks towards the shore on hearing the voice. He wades back to the beach where a waiter hands him an envelope.
Per lei.
Grazie.
Tim watches the waiter leave, then looks down at the note in his hand. Opening the envelope, he takes out a folded sheet of paper and reads. Tim looks up and watches as the waiter crosses a small stone bridge and trots down the stairs. Screen Australia, Goalpost Film, Snow Republic present, in association with Screen New South Wales and Film Victoria, a Goalpost Pictures production in association with HTM Productions. Holding the Man. At Xavier College in 1976, a younger Tim with long curly hair begins to get dressed in an elaborate stage costume, while John Callio gets ready for a footy match. Sitting in different parts of the building, they both wind tape around their socks. Tim clutches a bunch of red roses while in the locker room, John looks encouragingly at his teammates all dressed in black and red footy jerseys. The footy team rushes towards the oval while backstage Tim practices a bow. The footy flies through the air and the match commences. A young man with blonde hair dodges players from the opposite team as John sets himself up to catch the ball. Students stand beside the oval and watch the match as the young blonde man kicks the footy. John gets tackled to the ground.
He's holding the man, sir! He's holding him! Just get over it!
stares at the referee. Holding the roses and dressed for rehearsals, Tim walks from the dressing room onto the stage. A few students are seated on chairs arranged to one side, while the director, Chuck Hennessy, and other members of the production wait in the hall. Young Peppy lies on her back on a row of four chairs on the stage. Tim looks down at her.
Sweet flower, with flowers thy bridal bed I strew. Oh, woe, thy canopy is but dust and stones, which with sweet water nightly will I dew.
Can't you do it sadder? You're Paris. She's Juliet. You've lost your fiancé, not your bus pass.
Or wanting that with tears distilled
no,
by...
No, stop. Stop. Can you imagine what it would be like to, say, lose your girlfriend?
I guess so, sir.
It'd be tremendously sad, wouldn't it? What's her name?
I don't have a girlfriend, sir.
Yeah. What?
Here, lying in her tomb, mate. Cold, the colour. Colour's gone from her face. See? Lifeless.
Tim briefly closes his eyes.
Or, wanting that, with tears distilled by moans, the obsequies that I for thee shall keep, nightly shall be to strew thy grave and weep.
Dressed in his uniform and carrying his backpack, Tim jumps the fence of the oval to watch the footy match. He takes off his blazer and shouts encouragements.
Stay with him! Stay with him!
On the field, John catches sight of one of his teammates being shoved by an opponent, and a fight ensues between the pair. He runs up to the player of the opposing team with the ball and barges into him. John picks up the drop ball and passes it. While jogging across the field, John turns towards Tim when he calls. Tim smiles and gazes at John. The ball is kicked high into the air and John rushes towards it. As he leaps to catch the footy, a member of the opposing team slams into his legs and John falls to the ground. The players, the coach and Tim rush to John.
Keep still, John.
In hospital, John lies in bed, propped up on pillows. His left leg is in a thick white cast, another pillow underneath it. Tim sits on a chair by his bedside and smiles as John wakes up.
Who are you? I'm Tim Conagrave. I'm in your geography class.
Oh.
You're pegged for the best and fairest medal.
Yeah, I really want to think about that now, don't I?
I'm in a play. With your brother, actually. Romeo and Juliet.
You Romeo?
The competition. Paris, the one Juliet leaves for Romeo.
For Paris?
Yeah. Should come and see it.
John shrugs. Tim reaches for his bag and pulls out a pen, then stands.
Do you mind if I sign you? It's still drawing.
Tim puts the pen away and sits down.
You can if you want.
Tim stands and pulls the cap off the pen. John studies him as he leans over his leg. Tim scrawls, R plus J, Thursday, Tim, on the cast. On the night of the show, Peppy taps the key of a piano. Chuck walks amongst the cast members.
The house is open. Beginners, Tim. Beginners, everyone. Standing by for the prologue. Beginners.
Tim and Peppy kiss on the cheek.
Good luck, Break a leg.
away.
They take positions on stage.
Eric, curtain. Why is everybody saying break your leg? Because you're not here to say good luck.
Tim peeps through the curtains.
Is he here?
Tim.
Tim studies the gathered audience and spots his parents.
Tim!
Oh, hi, Paul.
Prologue. Tim!
Is your brother in? I'm in his geography class.
So?
Paul Callio takes his spot as Chuck walks to the front of the stage.
Okay, and remember, if anyone laughs at you, it's because they haven't the guts to do it themselves. Break a leg. Cue overture. Chris. Eric. Curtain.
In the wings, Eric pulls on the strings to open the curtains.
Two households, both alike in dignity. In fair Verona, where we lay our scene.
Peppy lies still on a bench with flowers clasped on her chest. Smoke is blown onto the stage from within the wings as Tim, dressed as Paris, takes his place with a bunch of roses in his hands. Tim pulls at his tights.
Sweet flower. With flowers.
I know.
The audience waits patiently as Tim steps closer to Peppy's plywood mausoleum.
Sweet flower.
Sweet flower. With flowers thy bridal bed I strew.
Day. At school, Tim shoves his bag into his locker and spots a rotting banana on the bottom shelf. Tim chucks it away. Eric and Biscuit address him.
What's up with you? Probably morning sickness. Maybe you're pregnant.
No, Doc, I think I know if I was.
Conagave's pregnant. Conagave's pregnant.
You told me you were on the pill.
You guys are sus.
I hope you're not angry. I'll get rid of it. If you want. Doctor, I'd like an abortion.
That's against.
Am I to understand that some kind of miracle has occurred?
Just a joke, sir.
You disgust me, Conagrave.
John watches as Tim shoves one of his mates and they head down a corridor. Supporting himself on crutches, John stops Tim.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Sorry I missed your play.
Did you? No worries. Do you want me to... I could
take... Yeah, I'll manage. Getting good at it.
Wait up.
Better get
John. I'm having this thing. The girls from the play are having this dinner party thing at my place on Friday.
Bugger.
John drops his books. Tim picks them up.
Should you be bending?
Pardon?
The baby.
Oh.
Tim tucks John's things under his arm and they walk together.
So, what do you reckon, this dinner?
Getting home might be difficult.
The girl who played Juliet, her mother's giving everyone a lift home.
I don't know about theatre. Or that Wobble Dagger fella.
What?
Shakespeare.
I'm not putting on Mozart.
It's in the ice bucket, Tim.
I know.
At the dinner party, three girls, Peppy, Gina and Prue, face John at the table. Tim steps into the dining room and Peppy gives him a cheeky smile. Tim sits down beside John.
So what did you think of the play?
I didn't see it.
We were fabulous.
I should have worked harder to make you come. Is there a problem?
Tim glances at Peppy, who blushes and looks away.
We're a new group of friends, so I think we should send a kiss around the table.
What? No.
Oh, yes.
Yes, let's.
Absolutely not.
I'll go first.
Peppy and Prue lean into each other and kiss on the lips. Prue kisses Gina's lips. Gina and Tim stand and they exchange a kiss across the table. They sit back down and John turns towards Tim, who leans in and kisses him gently on the lips. The girls watch intently.
Lucky bastard! Come here.
At the school assembly.
For those trapped in the darkness of sin, that the light shining in Christ may free them and bring them to God's favour, that moved by God's loving mercy, they may turn away from their sins and open their hearts to the divine life of grace. Lord, hear us.
Lord, hear our prayer.
Tim steps up to John.
Take these for you.
Tim waits as John dips his hand in holy water and crosses himself. He quickly does the same and walks out. In class, a film plays as Tim discreetly moves from his desk to sit beside John.
Let us take a closer look at a public enemy, the Queensland fruit fly. It is playing an increasingly sinister role in the everyday life of the nation. There is scarcely any fruit that is immune in the months that the fly goes about its destructive task.
Tim writes, "You shall win," on John's pencil case.
Best and fairest metal.
They exchange glances.
It's a new pencil case.
Biscuit leans forward.
You two seem to be getting along. I thought you had the hots for Dirge, too. He is the father of your child.
I'm sorry, but my heart belongs to John.
I'll have to make it a three-way. You have the job in Conagrave. Dirge needs to know he's special.
Eyes on the film, Tim reaches behind to take Dirge's arm.
All right.
John, you're dropped.
You guys are off.
Tim glances at John, who ignores him. At night, Tim sits on a bed and holds the phone receiver to his ear. John's father, Bob, answers the phone of the Callio household.
Hello?
Tim bites his nails.
Are you there? Hello?
Yes, hello. I'm calling for John.
Who's speaking?
Timothy. Conagrave.
One moment, Timothy.
Clutching the phone receiver, Tim begins to chew on his thumbnail, then stops.
That's a nice surprise.
Is it? That's good. There's something I want to tell you. That game Biscuit played in class.
What game?
Where he said I have to drop you. I didn't like it. I didn't like saying that to you. That I have to drop you.
Just a game. Mum's got dinner on. I'm supposed to set the table.
You have to go?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Bye.
It's nice chatting. Bye.
Tim hangs up and makes a futile gesture. He closes the phone book and gets up. In the bathroom, he sits in front of the mirror and slaps his cheeks and makes faces. A tape recorder plays on the counter.
Go away! Piss off!
I beg your pardon.
I'm naked!
Someone's on the phone for you.
Switching off the music, Tim opens the door.
Who?
A boy from school. Hurry, please. I've got dinner on. Tell your friends not to call at dinner time.
I can call back.
What? Why?
Are you dinner?
No, it's okay.
Tim slowly sits down on his parents' bed.
We're having casserole.
Chops.
We just had chops and mashed potato. And peas. That's good.
I really like you. I've liked you for some time.
I like you too.
Tim smiles.
Does this mean that we're going out?
You haven't asked me yet.
John Callio, will you go round with me?
John beams.
Yep.
Oh.
Day. Carrying their bags, the boys walk out of the school building together. Tim tries to take John's hand, but John moves away and looks over his shoulder. Tim puts his arm around John's shoulders. John shrugs away, then begins to run. Tim chases after him. During a footy match, Tim watches and laughs as John goes after the ball. John kicks the ball and Tim cheers. A list of names of previous winners of the Best and Fairest Award are written on a large wooden board. Against the year 1977, John's name gets painted. In class, Tim takes John's yellow pencil case and strikes out the word shall. The message now reads, "You win." Tim passes the pencil case back as the teacher watches. They run into an alley. A school bag is thrown beside some metal bins. John rushes to the end of the alley and leans against the wall. Tim slowly steps towards him. They gaze into each other's eyes, then exchange a kiss. They look at each other, then Tim takes John's face in his hands and they kiss passionately. Tim fumbles under John's sweater at the button on his pants. John grabs his hand.
No one can see.
I better get home.
God. So $10.
Let's go start having a pool myself.
You don't do that, do you?
You joking?
Why do you need to?
Because it's fun.
Can you see if you can stop?
At home.
Have you seen my Clio magazine?
No.
Mary Gert, Tim's mother, closes the door to his room. On his desk, under his homework, is the Clio magazine. Tim knocks a pencil between his teeth, then sucks on the end of it. He stares at the magazine, peeping out from under his homework, then suddenly picks it up. He hurriedly closes the curtains and puts a chair under the door jamb. He flicks through the pages of the magazine. He goes past glossy photos of women in swimwear and opens the centerfold. The members of Daily Wilson Big Band pose naked with their instruments. Tim glances at the door as he undoes his pants. He pulls his pants below his buttocks and squeezes some cream onto his palm from a bottle. Concentrating on the men in the photo, he leans on his table and begins to masturbate. The head of a toy dog on his desk nods with the movement of the table. Tim puts a hand on the picture, touching the crotch of some of the men hidden behind their saxophones. As Tim gets close to a climax, he holds a wicker paper basket to his crotch, then drops it and opens the drawer in front of him. With shaking hands, he pulls out a sock. The table shakes vigorously for a moment. Hunched over and mouth hanging open, Tim steps away from it and plonks on a beanbag. Taking the sock away from his crotch, Tim chucks it away. Morning. Clutching a letter, he walks into the school.
Dear John, it's 1 a.m. and I can't sleep. I think I went too far too soon when I reached into your Dax. All I can say is, I'm sorry. I don't want to pressure you to have sex. I love you. And if all we ever do is hug, that is enough for me.
Tim enters a classroom and spots John at his desk. As he approaches, Eric grabs the letter.
What's this?
Give it back.
A love letter. Eric, give it back to me.
Drive down to Lot, and that includes the peanut gallery at the back.
You. Give it back.
Tim takes the letter back and puts it on John's desk.
Your books to page 97. Seems to
be. Idiot.
We are now it's going to further investigate.
Watching John, Tim walks to his desk and sits down.
The formation of our own continent. There are, as you know, 14 major.
John slips the letter onto his lap as the teacher writes on the board. He unfolds it and reads.
I don't know them already, I can just write them down. There's
Tim watches intently as John reads. John looks up and smiles back at Tim. As Tim turns back to his book, he spots the teacher at John's shoulder.
I expected more of you, Carrier.
Father O'Malley takes the letter from John's table.
Seven Cocos.
In his office, Father O'Malley reads the letter as the two boys sit across the table.
We know each other, and what are you going to do about it?
Tim.
You're mumbling, Tim.
We love each other, and what are you going to do about it?
Father, please. This can't get around.
I'm afraid it's too late for that. There are people in this place that want to discipline you. You're quite the topic of conversation in the staff room.
Why haven't they tried to stop us?
The lay staff would like to. But the Jesuits look out for you. We've seen this before. Be careful, Tim.
Yes, Father.
Not everything has to be political.
Doesn't it?
Tim, there will be other battles. And they will need educated people to fight them.
He returns the letter.
Don't jeopardize your schooling over this, boys.
John takes the letter.
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts we're about to receive from thy bounty. Through Christ our Lord. Amen. Amen.
Tim joins the Callio family for a meal.
Tim.
Thank you, Mrs. Callio.
Lovely manners.
Lois Callio offers Tim the bread basket and speaks to her younger sons.
Do you want an onion? How about you?
No. Well, that's really good, Mum. That's really nice, Mum.
After the meal, Bob and Tim remain at the table.
John's changed. We've all noticed. Ever since he's been hanging around with you, he's come out of himself. Lois and I are very grateful. We'd like to thank you.
Wiping and putting away cutlery, Lois smiles at Tim.
He's a great guy.
John eavesdrops on the conversation. Evening. At home, Tim pushes a trundle bed into the sunroom where John unbuttons his shirt.
Mum's rule. Friends sleep in here on a school night. Otherwise, I stay up yakking.
I don't mind.
Tim sets up the trundle bed as John takes off his shirt and trousers.
You reckon your parents will let you come away to Eric's? It's a study break?
They said as long as you're going.
My fella's in a shack, you never know what might happen.
Night. John lies asleep on the trundle bed. Tim tiptoes around the bed and kneels on the floor. Leaning in, he places his mouth close to John's ear.
Sweet flower.
Tim holds John down on the bed, hand over his mouth. Faces close together, they kiss gently. Then John unzips the sleeping bag. He opens the flap part of the way and waits. Tim unzips it completely and lies down beside John, stroking his face lovingly. Propped on his elbow, Tim gently kisses John's face. John guides Tim's hand under the sleeping bag and strokes his arm. Tim's arm moves in and out of the sleeping bag as they kiss. Tim takes his hand out of the sleeping bag and they kiss. Early morning light streams into the sunroom. The boys lie cuddled on the trundle bed, John's head resting on Tim's chest. John wakes and gazes up at Tim, who looks down at his friend.
I feel like I played a grand final.
Tim kisses John's forehead. John lays his head back on Tim's chest and cuddles him. Tim looks out of the large windows of the sunroom. Tim turns at the creaking and spots a figure moving past the door. He rushes to the door of the sunroom, then slides it open as his mother goes to the kitchen, and he slips out. Day. Dirge, Biscuit and Eric meander with fishing gear through the bush.
We'll be back with lunch.
Good luck.
John reclines on a couch outside the cottage reading a book. Sitting on the other end, John kisses his foot.
What are you doing? Just felt like it.
Tim playfully kicks John on the arm and smiles. They gaze at each other for a while, then Tim goes back to reading his book. John continues to stare at Tim, who looks up to find John suggestively raising his eyebrows. The boys close their books and John sips his drink from a can. At home, Bob walks into John's room. In the cottage, the boys writhe naked on the bed, kissing passionately and making love. In John's room at home, an envelope falls to the floor as Bob picks up a couple of books from the desk and studies them. Bob picks up the letter and makes to put it back, then opens the envelope and reads. In the bush, the boys return, one carrying a bucket with fish sloshing in the water.
Dear John, I think I went too far too soon when I reached into your decks.
Dad, did Paul get an extra $2? I'm the one who cleaned the gutters.
Ouch! Are you fucking kidding?
John slams the door on the other boys. At home, Bob takes out his wallet and hands Chris some money.
Thanks.
In the cottage, Dirge scales fish as Eric and Biscuit wait. At night, the friends smoke and drink beer while playing cards in front of a small fire burning in the fireplace.
Ought to run into town for more beer.
Too freaking cold.
Good streaking weather.
Piss off, I'm not doing that.
What? You have before.
Leave it, Biscuit.
No, why not?
Fuck off, Connygrave. Just fuck off.
Fucking homo.
Dirge pulls on his cigarette and glares at Tim. Biscuit puts down his cards and begins undressing. Pulling down his underwear along with his pants, yes. Biscuit clutches his clothes in front of his crotch as he hurries out of the cottage. Eric and Tim undress as well, followed by John. They rush out and Eric slaps his bare buttocks on the window.
Oh, Dirge boy!
Dirge turns to look at Eric mooning, then continues smoking his cigarette. The naked boys run through the dark bush and onto the highway.
Lovely night for it.
Unlike the clappers, boys.
A naked Dirge runs after them.
I'm doing it!
But don't you two look at my ass!
The boys wait for him to catch up and they run down the road together.
Hello.
Morning. Carrying a rolled-up sleeping bag under his arm and a bag, Tim returns home and pets the cat. Inside, his parents wait in the dining room.
Someone died.
I told myself I was being stupid.
What?
John's father came to see me today. He made me read your letter.
What letter?
Tim, when I was your age, guys used to muck around in the showers at the yacht club while their parents were up in the bar. Everyone did it. You're going to grow out of this.
I hope you do. Otherwise, you're going to have a very lonely life. A very sad life.
Up until now, I couldn't be happier.
Don't be smart. You're living under our roof.
Your mother and I have made a decision.
Mary Gert pours wine as Tim sits down, arms crossed tightly at his chest.
You and John can't see each other anymore.
Yes, we can. You can't stop us.
The man is threatening court action.
And do you support him?
What you're doing is illegal.
Do you support him?
No, frankly, we don't. But today has been the most humiliating day of my life.
John won't be staying here anymore, and you're not to use the telephone to contact him.
You fucking poxy traitors. I hope you get cancer.
Anna steps out of her room.
Wow.
Nicholas shouts at his brother.
They all call you the school poofter. I stuck up for you. And then I find out it's true.
From an upstairs window, Anna watches her brother pedal away on his bicycle. Fighting tears, Tim cycles aimlessly around. Evening. At home, John looks at photos of Tim from the play and snapshots of them together. He puts them into a box. He takes down other photos and keepsakes from his wall and packs them away. Suburban roads through the evening. At night, he reaches John's house. He marches through the yard and goes to John's window. He sees John taking down photos of him. John goes to the window and opens it. Faces close together, they gaze at each other. Then Tim lovingly kisses John on the lips.
It tastes like fly spray.
Yeah. We'll get through.
John?
Tim hides behind the wall as John hurriedly sits on his bed. Bob opens the door and steps into the room. Arms crossed, he stands by the bed.
Homework all done?
Pretty much.
Your mother's very upset. I talked to the parish priest. He recommended a psychologist. Your mother will make an appointment and you will see this man.
Staring at the floor, John nods.
John, you've got to put this in the past. Exam soon. So it ought to be easy for you to avoid.
Leaning against the wall outside the window, Tim eavesdrops and stares sadly into the distance. Inside, Bob stands close to his son and squeezes his shoulder.
I love you.
Still staring at the floor, John nods slightly as Bob strokes his hair. Bob walks out of the room, leaving the door slightly open. Tim waits outside. John suddenly gets up and rushes to the window. Shoving it off its frame, he climbs out. Rushing through the backyard with their bikes, the boys get onto the footpath and Tim cycles away with John following close behind. In a small townhouse, Tim, sporting neatly cut hair, inserts a cassette tape into a small recorder. Richard, a thin man wearing a sweater draped over his shoulders, lights an incense stick.
You don't mind if I record this?
What year were you born?
Pardon?
Your birth year.
Oh, 1959. October.
Huh. Year of the pig.
Holding a diary, Tim stands as Richard sits down.
Little sandalwood always helps.
So it's okay I'm taping us?
Sid, you're making me nervous.
Tim takes a chair opposite Richard.
So we're devising a theatre piece, the actors and me as the writer. We've all graduated drama school. You know Nida?
I know Narnia.
No, not that. We agreed to interview people because we felt the issue has been hijacked by the media, all this sex, death, horror shit.
How long have you been positive?
Me? No, I'm not.
I'd rather not know.
Well, if you haven't been exposed.
How can you write this play? You're making assumptions about your status.
No, I'm in a stable relationship.
I think he's cheating on you.
You don't know him. We've been together since high school.
Constantly.
Tim nods.
That doesn't happen.
Just going to check.
Tim rewinds the tape.
See if that's working. Okay. So perhaps just state your name and age.
Me? I'm Richard. I'm 33. And I have decided I am going to make it to 34.
Tim shakes Richard's hand, then wipes his own subtly on the chair.
What do you want to include in your play?
Richard looks at the table fan behind Tim.
I've forgotten. Were we talking about a helicopter?
No.
I mean, the kind of helicopter that drops supplies.
No.
I get ticked off that some people get this nice little boat ride, you know? Instead, I'm in this quicksand with the snakes. I shouldn't have to put up with it.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong, because most people have only seen these things in a book or something like that. Like a leopard. The other night on the stairs, I saw one for real.
Tim watches Richard intently.
Where were you?
In the Congo. Leopard was gonna have a baby.
Richard's eyes are teary. A purple bruise mars the corner of his lips.
You think I'm not making sense?
Tim sits in a waiting room of a clinic. John marches in and gives him a double thumbs up and sits down beside him.
Negative. Thank God.
You weren't worried, were you?
No. But imagine. Being told you've got it.
Well, we don't. You want to go grab some lunch after this?
Some of us have real jobs.
Tim, 2117.
Tim walks towards the doctor's office.
Look at us. We're fast lane gays.
Smiling, he follows the doctor down a corridor. John reads a brochure, then checks his watch as Tim despondently walks back. John's smile slowly disappears as Tim approaches him, arms crossed at his chest.
Tim?
John follows Tim out of the waiting area.
What is it?
He said I'm positive, John.
But I'm negative.
In the doctor's office.
I'll explain. The system here is that if your result is negative, you see a counsellor, and if you're positive, you see a doctor like me. John, the clerk put your file in the wrong pigeonhole, and the counsellor gave you the result without checking the file. I'm sorry. You've been given the wrong result. You're positive. You both are. I'd like to take some blood from you both to do a cell count. I'm truly so sorry. This should not happen.
At home, Tim lies with his head under John's T-shirt.
Can you not stretch my T-shirt?
I'm not.
Do you think I infected you? You with the ITA counts.
You're recently infected, that's what the doctor was saying.
Tim slips the T-shirt over his head.
We didn't know this was lurking. It didn't have a name.
It's not as though we have hardly been with it.
I got something.
Tim holds up a sealed condom.
I couldn't decide between ribbed for her pleasure.
We're not gonna fuck, Tim. That's how we got into this mess in the first place.
At the theatre.
Most people have only seen these things in a book or something like that. The other night on the stairs, I saw one for real. In the Congo, the leopard was going to have a baby.
Richard had been diagnosed with toxoplasmosis, a disease caused by a parasite found in cat feces.
You're telling me I ate cat poo?
Probably as a kid, playing in a sandpit. We all did, darling. We mistook it for a consequence-free environment.
Tim and John sit watching in the audience.
We had hoped to interview Richard again. But as he prepared to welcome in 1986, Richard succumbed to dementia and a litany of AIDS-related illnesses. Just down the road from here, at St. Vincent's.
Peppy watches the show. Later, she sits cuddled with Tim as John sits beside them on rocks.
There were thousands of school kids dropping dead. They'd do something about it. God help you if you're a poofter, or a junkie, or a prostitute.
We're not like those people in the play. Not gonna get us.
We're lucky. We're the second wave. They're gonna cure it.
1979.
You ready?
Not really.
Let's do it.
Standing in an elevator, Tim takes John's face in his hands and they kiss. Tim keeps an eye on the elderly woman in the lift who ignores them. She stares at the floor numbers above the lift door. On the first floor, John checks his watch. Still kissing, Tim shoves his arms down.
Campus gays, our bodies, our rights.
Thank you.
Woody, a young man sporting a moustache, hands the woman a pamphlet. She puts it in her trolley. Woody steps up to the door of the lift.
That was great. You think that was good?
2, 4, 6, 8,
students protest for gay rights at a university.
We are no longer invisible.
Monash University lesbians.
Tim's car is parked outside the Callio home.
It's not like we're lobbing petrol bombs in the street, John.
Do you want to come inside?
Into your home?
They're all down at the beach house.
Really?
or if your dad's installed TIM detectors.
Inside, they watch old home movies of the Callio family on a projector. Standing in front of the screen and illuminated by the coloured light of the projector, John and Tim kiss lovingly. Getting undressed and still kissing, they burst through the door of John's room. Tim shoves John onto the bed and pulls off John's trousers. Getting on top, Tim continues kissing John, who wraps his arms around Tim's neck.
I want you inside me.
You want to suck me?
I want to know what it feels like.
John gazes into Tim's eyes.
Don't you think it's a bit dirty? Oh, I sound so Catholic.
You are Catholic.
You are.
It's not an insult, Tim.
Did this conversation just stop being sexy?
Please.
Tim watches as John slowly turns on his stomach and lies face down across the bed. Tim kisses his buttocks. Pulling his underwear up, John rushes out of the room. He runs through the house and peers through the living room window. His family get out of the car. He rushes back to his room.
Get in the closet. Are you serious? Get in the closet. Get in the cupboard!
John shoves Tim into the cupboard, then pushes in his clothes as well and closes the door. Dragging on his pants, he trips in the hallway.
Will you help your brother get the tools?
Tim's here. Please don't tell Dad.
What are you a jolly well way to get him out? Quick, smart. Anthony!
John runs back to his room.
We've got to go, hey? We've got to go.
Tim pulls on his pants.
Come on, go!
As the boys rush out of the room, Lois steps into the hallway.
Not very happy about this.
Lois walks towards the front door as John takes Tim around the back.
Do you mind starting to pong?
Whose car is that out front? John?
John opens the back door and Tim steps out.
Are you home?
Tim steps back into the house.
John!
John slowly walks to the front room as Tim waits by the door.
Whose car is that?
Dad, Tim's here.
Tell him to leave.
I invited him. Now I'm going with him in his car.
No, you're not.
Tim? Come in here.
Arms crossed, Tim joins them. Bob glares at the young men.
We love each other, Dad. There's nothing you can do about it.
Don't you speak to your father like that.
John reaches for Tim's hand and they lock fingers. Together, they walk past Bob and leave the house through the front door. Lois looks at her husband, who stands expressionless. Outside, Tim and John walk through the yard and get into Tim's car. Bob closes the screen door of the house as the boys drive away. Night. Inside the parked car.
Cramp. Maybe if we...
Ow, my balls.
Sorry. Just...
A door opens and Tim's legs stick out.
This is... Yeah.
Oh, gentle.
Can we go further in?
Sorry.
Pardon?
Slowly, I said slowly.
It's gonna snap off in a minute.
Up. Up. It's in.
It's in?
Yep.
Oh. Is it? How do I? Like this? How do this?
Lying on top, Tim thrusts into John.
I think you better stop.
Pull that out.
Pull that. Slowly! Oh, God! You okay?
Yeah. That was great.
At home, Tim packs the things into his car. He gives his sister a record before loading up the rest. Mary Gert pulls out a folded dish rack from the back seat and Tim closes the door. He hugs his parents and opens the car door. Mary Gert hands back the dish rack and smiling, Tim gets into the car. Moving boxes lie around a dimly lit room in a small flat. Tim picks up a book and sits down on the bed. In a pub, Tim sits with Woody at a table and looks at the gay social group from university. He spots a young man with dark hair playing pool, who turns and smiles at him.
Oh! Susanna! Yes!
I told you.
His name is Ian. He's new. I've been trying not to stare.
Tuesday night at my place was interesting.
God. What does Peter think?
Well, those two in the shower together is a sight to behold. You and John are so sweet, though. We're like an old married couple.
Tim takes a drag on his cigarette, then sips his beer. He looks at John sitting at another table chatting.
This prick's been eyeballing me.
Where?
A man standing at the bar stares at Tim.
Father's threatened, but he's turned on.
Oi, love. Your friends are poofters.
Yeah, I work that out. I'm a dyke, you dead shit. Go Rome!
Fuck it.
Tim pulls Woody onto his lap and kisses him on the lips. The man at the bar shoves the girl carrying drinks and John rushes to him.
Wait, back off my screen!
What? Is that your boyfriend?
I don't want to fight you.
Fuck off, you dog shit!
The man punches John and others shove him up against the bar. A fight ensues. Kneeling on the floor, John raises his head as blood flows from his nose.
Don't touch him!
Don't touch him!
Tim watches the man kick another bloke. John punches the man. The activists slowly make their way out of the pub as the fight continues.
Get out! Now! We have every right to be here!
Come on, Tim! Let's get out!
Fuck it!
In Peter's flat, frozen food packets help nurse wounds.
Relax. I'm a nurse. At least I will be when I graduate.
We should go back. Trash the place.
Settle down, Tim.
You should go to the police, yeah?
Those fascists.
Peter goes to John and studies his bruised face.
How's that face?
I've had worse on the footy field, Peter.
John smiles broadly as Tim watches. At the cinema.
I don't want to have sex with other people.
Okay, but would you allow me to?
Who with? Maybe just once. Would you let me try it? Once, see how it goes.
I don't know why you'd want to. Is there something about me?
Just, there are things our generation is supposed to be experiencing, and I don't believe it's fair to expect our lovers to fulfill all of our needs.
Where'd you read that?
Please don't dismiss my politics.
So this is about your politics, not your stiffy?
Stiffy? Of course it is stiffy. John, am I the only boyfriend in the world asking this?
You're the only one asking.
I'm not me. This is normal now. You are begrudging me being normal.
I don't want to talk about this. Okay, meet us at 9 to 5. Apparently it's very funny, okay?
Okay, here we go. At a picnic volleyball game. Woody pours wine into a woman's mouth from a goon sack. Winning a point, Tim hugs Ian, who is dressed in a pair of dungarees. John and Peter high-five as Ian offers Tim a piggyback ride. Tim jumps on. Tim misses the ball and smacks Ian on the buttocks as they go after the ball.
Kick it back, you queens!
Ian kicks the ball back.
I think you found the brace.
I wrecked already.
Oh, yes.
Brow creased, John watches as Ian and Tim flirt with each other. He runs to them and punches Tim in the stomach.
Come on, Woody. I'm really sorry, Tim.
The others stop their game to watch as John marches back.
John! I'm sorry. I'm just a little bit drunk.
Give you a lift,
thanks. Are you still staying at my place tonight?
Picking up his shoes, Peter runs to his car. At a nightclub, middle-aged men congregate around the dance floor. Tim heads to the bar and orders a drink. A young man approaches him as Tim sips his beer. A few young men dance to the music. The young man, Harry, stays at the bar watching Tim. At his flat, a naked Tim is streaked with sweat as he kisses and makes love to Harry. It's marching marvelous, it's marching crew, but you can arrest him when you've been a fool. On another night, Tim lies atop another man and thrusts into him. Tim bites the man's nipple. On a later day, he does the same to John.
Ow, ow! Jesus! Is it bleeding?
I thought it might be.
What?
Pleasurable.
John gets out of bed.
I did that thing.
What thing?
I put my name down. Like I said. For acting school. Now I have to audition.
Good.
It'll mean moving. The acting school's in Sydney, if I get in.
Melbourne would be better.
It's the National Drama School.
I think you'll get in.
Thank you.
John sits on the bed and encouragingly rubs Tim's leg.
Long distance would be hard.
That's why I thought we should have a trial.
A trial?
A trial separation. Are you all right with that?
John's smile disappears.
No. When does it start?
I don't know.
Now?
Well, yes, I guess it has to start now.
Tim sits up.
Can I still sleep here tonight?
Of course, I'm not going to kick you out of my bed.
Yeah, well, if it started, no, I don't know.
Stay tonight.
Yeah, I'd prefer to stay tonight.
Stay tonight, but tomorrow it starts.
Tomorrow it starts?
I don't know.
Tim lies back down, curling up on his side and burying his face into his pillow. John makes to lie down beside him.
Doesn't it mean we can't cuddle?
I think it does.
John stares at Tim for a moment, then sits up. At NIDA, Tim auditions. Sitting on a chair on a stage, he sobs. He looks up at the panel.
Some access.
The three members of the panel make notes.
Thanks, Tim.
Tim stands and makes to speak, then picks up his denim jacket from the back of the chair. He walks into the wings. In Melbourne, sunlight falls on Tim's face as he watches his friends on the beach. Hands tucked into his jacket pockets, he walks towards them. Reclining on the sand beside John, Pepe turns and sees him coming down a boardwalk.
Then won't you be?
Hello, you.
John gets up and walks to the other side of the group as Tim approaches and sits down beside Peppy.
Then won't set you free. Just when you say no more.
John smiles slightly as Tim approaches him.
Oh, I never wanted to be Quasimodo's dream.
Hello, bald eagle.
Tim smiles. John reaches up to stroke Tim's neatly cut hair. They exchange a kiss.
Master, please find another
me. I found out about drama school, John. Promise you won't make a big deal.
Hey, guys! Tim got into drama school! He's gonna be the next Mel Gibson!
Oh, thank you.
Tim takes a bow.
Thank you. Stop it! Keep going.
At drama school, students pretend to be monkeys. Ooh. Tim picks up a shoe and examines it, then shuffles away. He interacts with other students, leapfrogging over one and nuzzling another.
Good. Very good. We'll play it for an hour. Let's see what we get.
Barry, the teacher, walks amongst the students.
Tim, effeminate monkeys don't get work.
Tim squats on his haunches and pouts. Barry approaches him.
Show me your silverback.
Standing up, Tim puffs out his chest and shuffles with his feet apart. Challenging another man with long curly hair, Tim knocks him with his chest. Taking his t-shirt off, the young man raises his arms and bares his teeth. Tim wraps his arms around the man's chest as Barry watches. Taking off his t-shirt, Tim gnaws on the man's chin. Other male students role-play with their t-shirts off. At home, Tim nibbles on the skin of another naked man with curly blonde hair. They writhe on the bed. Tim reaches for a small bottle on the bookshelf and opens it. He holds it to the man's nose, who snorts the contents. Closing one nostril, Tim inhales, then kisses the young man. At school, the students walk in a circle.
Walk like men and women. Lead with your headlights. How's the public ever going to believe this leading man wants to win the day?
Are you trying to teach us self-loathing? Is that it?
No. This is about gesture, tone of voice, courage. Look at you. It's a very womanly way to hold yourself.
A third of this class is gay. Did you know that?
You're more than your sexuality, Tim. Walk. Long necks. Come on.
Tim looks around as the students start walking again. At night, he makes love to another man with long blonde hair. The man pushes Tim's face down to his crutch. At NIDA, Tim rehearses.
Will you go?
I'll give you some look, Will! Mine?
No.
Mine?
No.
Can we stop playing games, please, Barry?
How about you listen to the other person on stage for once?
I have a right.
You think you're an actor? I think you're here to be the loudest person in the room. I'm speaking. I think you're here to be validated, to be loved. Find that elsewhere. We're not giving you that, and your audience certainly won't. Now play the blasted scene.
Tim swallows and gestures for the girl to come forward. He clutches her arms tightly and grimaces. He lets go of her, then turns to Barry.
I can't.
Well, I think that's answered that. Brett, you'll do Stanley.
Tim wipes his forehead as long-haired Brett climbs onto the stage. Night. Tim wanders the streets of Sydney. Swigging from a bottle, he passes a group of drag queens in an alley. They smile at him, and one flicks her feather boa around his neck.
Oh, 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 oh.
You're
steam room. A man in a swimming pool eyes him. Middle-aged men wrapped in towels stand along the walls, while others sit with their legs swinging in the water. A grey-haired man emerges from the pool and kisses another middle-aged man. In the sauna, Tim engages in a threesome. Later, he locks himself in a cubicle. Alone, he hugs himself and hangs his head as he sits on the bench. And the words in the script seem to fit, so to have some surprise. I just want this to last, for my future is past, I don't know. And if this is the case, then I'm losing like straight for now on. At NIDA, the cast of a play are dressed and ready. Wearing a tuxedo, Tim peers through the curtains at the gathering audience. Wearing a black gown, Veronica steps up behind him. On stage.
More than any desire, anywhere.
Tim turns to the audience and spots John.
Deep down, in my deepest heart, I want you back again. Please, John.
Don't say any more. You're making me cry so dreadfully. I'm going to fucking kill you.
In the audience, a curly-headed young man smiles knowingly at John. Day, Tim lies on top of John's car.
Get off! To go.
Leave me with you. I can't bear that mean drama school. They say I'm too gay, too loud, too self-centered.
Tim looks down through the driver's side window.
And I want my Tupperware back.
Sure. If I visit again.
Might you visit again?
Tim grabs the keys of the car.
Maybe I'll check out some car clinics up here.
Really? Ow. Ow. Hang on. This is knackering me.
He grabs a Tupperware box from the dashboard and sits cross-legged on the roof.
Spoke to Dad about a business loan. Probably have to be Melbourne, but...
Sydney needs chiropractors too.
Tim's shoe appears on John's side. His face peers through the opposite window.
Thanks for coming all this way. I wasn't sure you would.
Good to give the new wheels a run.
Tim clambers back on the roof and munches on a biscuit while staring at the sea. John gets out of the car.
Mum and Dad don't want me to move up here. There's stuff on TV.
What? Gay means AIDS.
For them, I guess it does.
Pathetic.
I knew you'd react like that.
Well, I'll be waiting for you, John. If you choose Sydney.
John smiles.
John. What?
Can I kiss you?
Give it a go.
Tim smiles and gazes at John, then shifts his position on the roof to lean in. Hesitantly, he gets closer and they kiss lovingly. They gaze at each other for a moment, then close their eyes and touch foreheads. Both men sit cross-legged on the roof of a white hatchback parked by the sea and stare out over the water. Tim slowly raises his arm and wraps it around John. John leans on Tim, resting his head on Tim's shoulder. Come on, baby. Baby, take my hand. 1988. At a clinic, Tim watches as a clinician performs a blood test on John. On a rainy day, they sit in Tim's car. Tim partially conceals a sign under his denim jacket that reads, Actor.
You got everything? Can I have my sign?
It's mine.
Dickhead.
John pulls it out. The sign reads, Chiropractor.
Give it to Lois for the trophy cabinet.
Yep.
You're doing the right thing.
They were going to guess anywhere with me selling up the business.
I'm proud of you. Maybe I'll be brave enough to tell mine.
Not the week of your sister's wedding.
John. I know that.
Hi, Tim.
Hello.
You going to give me a kiss goodbye?
Lois holds an umbrella as John hurriedly kisses Tim and gets out of the car with his bag. He kisses his mother's cheek and they walk through the yard sharing the umbrella. Bob waits under the porch. John stops when he sees his father. At the Conagrave home, Dick pushes the trundle bed into the sunroom where Tim goes through old mail.
Mary's staying in your room, but you should be comfortable out here.
Oh, you got those? Good. You would update your address, mate.
They're ancient.
Do you hear we're having a band at the reception? Very good they are. We'll be in the ballroom over at Rip and Lee.
Did you open this one?
Maybe Mum. She's the one who kept them for you. No, it'll be a big show, don't you worry. We've got an orchestra at the church.
It's a bit over the top, isn't it?
It's a small chamber orchestra.
So it's a full nuptial, communion and all. Is she Catholic still?
It's what your sister wants.
Best wedding I ever went to was my friend Mourner's. It was a simple exchanging of vows in a room full of friends. It was very moving.
Why don't you pull your head in, Tim?
Hands in his trouser pockets, Dick leaves the room. Tim opens an envelope. Later, he speaks on the phone.
It's part of our look-back scheme. You donated blood in 1981. It was pooled with 19 others. Mr. Conagrave, the patient who received it has gone on to develop AIDS. We'd like you to be tested.
It's fine. There's no need. I am positive, but I was infected in 1985.
You mean you were diagnosed in 1985?
Yes. Really, there's no reason... 1981.
Mr. Conagrave, you're one of the last to be contacted. The other donors are all clear.
Tim places the letter on the kitchen counter where Mary Gert prepares food.
Not this week, Tim.
You read it?
Wash your hands. I need some help. Flat out, with relatives arriving from everywhere, and your father wants his pre-wedding drinks. Alfresco is just not me. Now, can you see how to slice and twist the salmon, just like the picture?
Tim starts slicing the salmon fillets.
I've been doing some volunteering. Oh, I get paid for it now. It's social work for the AIDS Council.
Tell me I've nothing to worry about.
Mary Gert fills tiny pastry bowls while Tim twists the salmon and places them on the corner of the chopping board. She stops and looks at her son. He meets her gaze.
What a waste. All that talent.
I'm not dead yet.
I just don't understand how you've got it. I mean, it's just you and John.
We've both got it.
Oh, God. A beautiful boy. Is it from a donation? Is that why the Red Cross are writing?
Would you prefer it that way?
Did I say that? I didn't say that. I prefer none of it, thank you.
Outside in the yard, Dick wipes deck chairs with a cloth.
After the wedding, after all of this, I think we should tell Dad.
I'm making a mess. Look at this.
She picks up the baking tray and places it near the kitchen sink and fixes the fillings.
This letter, it's changed things. It says I could have been infected. Since university. John and I, we always assumed he was first. I think I was comfortable with that. Now it's...
Mary Gert steps closer to Tim and strokes his cheek.
It's like I've killed the man that I love.
What's all this slacking off in the kitchen?
Mary, Gert and Tim turn to face Dick. At Anna's wedding reception.
It'd be at least three toasts on the table. Maybe a burger.
How did it go?
Mum just kept blowing her nose. Dad wanted to talk about my business insurance. I want to fall apart alone.
Drink, gentlemen.
Thanks. I can't.
Tim picks up a glass of champagne.
I suppose your parents assume I infected you.
No. Why would you even say that?
Tim looks at John, then turns away, sipping the champagne.
I told my parents.
Now? Why?
Because I
read... How could you be so selfish?
You are gorgeous. Timothy's already gay. Tell me about the eyelashes.
They're false.
We loved your dog food commercial, Timothy.
Thanks. I'm doing social work now.
And you're writing another play?
He's my PR man.
Hey, do you reckon you could introduce me to Mel Gibson?
I work for the AIDS Council. I'm on the hotline in the van that goes up and down the wall. That's where male sex workers find their clients, and we empower them to have safe sex and have someone to talk to. I find it really rewarding.
That's nice for you, dear.
John, I'm stealing you.
John walks away with Mary Gert and the aunts, leaving Tim alone. In the middle of the hall, Mary Gert and John share a slow dance.
Come on, son.
So bad stuff.
No, come on.
No.
Tim puts his drink down and Dick drags him to the dance floor. Father and son begin a waltz. Dancing with her groom, Anna turns to them.
Who's leading?
I am.
I hate to say it, but you have a right to be free.
Tim and Dick smile, then hold each other close. Guests dance to the music as the band plays on the stage.
Hey, this old bloke's been asking about you all night.
Mary Gert smiles and lets go of John.
Here you are, Timothy.
She brings the two young men closer. Patting Tim on the shoulder, she leaves them to dance together. John rests his head on Tim's shoulder and smiles as the pair move slowly around the dance floor. Eating from a small plate, the priest watches them.
All right.
John nods and smiles. 1991. John lies on a hospital bed with an oxygen mask over his nose and mouth. Gloved fingers pinch the skin around his nipple. Tim rushes to the door of the room, slides it open and enters.
I'm here, John.
Try not to talk, John. We don't want a coughing fit.
Was it the chemo?
More likely a burst PCP cyst. You're his boyfriend? You're staying?
Tim nods and steps closer to the bed. Dressed in surgical scrubs, the doctor continues their work.
How's that local?
Okay.
Left arm raised over his head, John glances at Tim.
I'm about to cut now, John.
John nods, breathing with his mouth open. The scalpel digs neatly into his skin. The doctor watches John as Tim looks on.
Right, this is going to hurt a bit, John.
The doctor inserts his forefinger into the incision and moves it in and out. John closes his eyes. Tim grimaces as a tube is inserted into John's lung. Fluid in a jar begins to bubble.
That's it, bubbling away. When the bubbles stop, we know it's healed.
Night. In his apartment, Tim sits at the dining table and sorts through numerous coloured pills, counting out daily dosages and placing them in small medicine boxes. Tim looks up, then notices a round red lesion on the inside of his right elbow. He looks over his shoulder on hearing the coughing, then gently rubs the lesion with a finger. Expression worried, he gets up and slowly steps into a dimly lit hallway. He stares at the closed bedroom door, then leans on the wall. At the hospital, a tube sticks out of John's lung.
Nearly there.
Good. John lies on the bed with his left arm over his head.
Just a little more. And done.
Standing by the bed, Tim chews his nails, then gently strokes John's leg. Finishing his work, the middle-aged doctor looks up at Tim.
He'll be in for a few days at least. You have some rest.
I'm fine. Seeing him in pain, I can't bear.
He'll need his boyfriend healthy. If the lung doesn't stick, it's going to need to be surgery, but only when he's strong enough. He'll need you.
Tim stares at the doctor, then lovingly strokes John's thick black hair. Smiling, John winks at him. Day. A seagull flies overhead as Tim twirls around in one spot. He stands on the end of a pier with his feet in ankle-deep water. He stares at the shimmering sea, a simple wedding band on his left ring finger. Wearing pajamas, John sits on the edge of his hospital bed, an oxygen tube wrapped behind his ears. Tim enters the room with a large box and a picnic bag.
Our freezer of chockers. Penny Cook has made you minestrone. Warner has made you minestrone. Someone has made you... I'm not sure what that is.
Tim takes out a pair of hair clippers from the bag.
Why'd you bring those?
Holding the clippers, Tim steps up to John and begins dusting his back.
Penny's comes with a little pesto in a separate container, so let's go with that.
Looking gaunt, John watches as Tim takes out some clothes.
I'm sorry. Snotty tissue. Got eaten by the Simpson fully automatic.
Send you check. Can't you do anything right?
Tim turns to stare at John, then his eyes become unfocused. He slowly raises his hand and stares at his fingers. Through the gaps in his fingers, John appears with an aura around his head. John watches Tim with sunken eyes.
Sorry.
Tim looks at John, then turns to the things scattered on the second bed in the room.
I think I forgot the pesto.
Tim nods once, then mechanically walks out of the room and down the corridor. At the end of the hallway, he drops to the ground. A male nurse rushes out of a room and runs to him. Eyes open, Tim lies twitching on the floor in a doctor's office.
Will I still be able to write?
Should we take a look at your scan?
I have been looking at it. Toxoplasmosis, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I did a theatre thing once. Transmits via cat. I wrote this thing. And I knew I'd get it eventually. I've been thinking, you know, getting some people together, starting something. I'm feeling very creative and I don't want to waste that if I'm going to have brain damage from this.
The lesions don't eat the brain.
Which is a terrific phrase, by the way.
But they do put pressure on it. Now, you're filling up. You're feeling creative, you say.
What about dementia and memory loss? Sorry, go on.
We'll learn more as we treat it.
I'm convinced that will happen to me. I've been thinking about getting some people together.
You said that.
I'm having those ideas and I could start something.
Tim, I think you're manic.
Do you?
Yes. The cells in your brain have become hypersensitive to certain neurotransmitters. I'm prescribing haloperidol.
No, it's good. We're good. John's in here and he's being looked after.
I think we'll have to admit you. I don't want you spending all your money or thinking that you're Jesus.
What happens to my soul if I go mad? Does it stay trapped inside or is it floating free?
John sits on a chair in his hospital room with a towel draped over his shoulders as Tim stands behind him and shaves his hair with the clippers. A hospital tag is wound around Tim's left wrist. John briefly closes his eyes as Tim finishes and uses his fingers to remove the bits of hair from John's scalp. They gaze at each other and John smiles. Dressed in a white surgical gown, John sits on a wheelchair. As Tim pushes him down a corridor, Bob approaches from a perpendicular hallway. As Bob walks down the corridor, he passes a bald and gaunt middle-aged man pushing his IV fluid stand as he paces. He sees other sick men in rooms.
I don't want to be here. Get me my mother.
Bob peers into a large room and watches a nurse struggling with an old man, trying to get out of his bed. A younger man with lesions on his scalp tries to talk to the old man. Bob looks away and continues down the corridor. Placing his palms on a wall, Bob leans his forehead against it. A male nurse spots him.
You right there, darling?
Bob turns to him as a light on the ceiling flickers. A row of pill dispenser cups are placed as a mohawk across John's shaven head. Squatting on the floor, Tim stuffs bits of hair into John's ear. Tim picks up his camera and winds it. He gestures to John to pose, who pouts.
Okay, one from the side.
John turns his head sideways. Tim places an ice cream cone over the first cup on John's head.
Are you making fun of me? I'm doing it because you look so beautiful.
Oxygen tube around his gaunt face, John smiles. Mm-hmm. Cups removed, Tim places toy animals on John's head, sticking them with blue tack. Mm-hmm. He has a lock of hair between his nose and upper lip.
Mm-hmm.
Bob enters the room.
Hi, son.
Tim drops his fake moustache.
Hi. We're just in a good mood. Had some good news. Would you like a chair, Bob?
From the flat.
Bills and stuff, eh? Thank you.
So what are the doctors saying, John?
He's not allowed to talk. The lung again. But we've had...
Good news, Dad.
He's not supposed to talk. He's had some good news. John's in remission. When he's strong enough, he'll go into surgery and they'll open him up and see the snips and snails and puppy dog tails and sew up the lung. Can you believe it? Remission.
You've worked hard for it, son.
Bob plants a kiss on John's shaven head. John smiles broadly.
They're saying we can probably go home in the meantime.
What have you done to his hair?
It was getting ratty.
Big bud.
Put your hearing aid in.
He said, put your hearing aid in.
I don't like wearing it.
John's talking about going home for Christmas. They can't operate until January.
Your mama like that. We'll fly you back down, John.
He's had a pneumothorax. The airlines won't let him fly, but I'll drive him down.
Bob looks over his shoulder at an Asian family by a bedside.
I found it in the drawer of your desk. I have some concerns. Why is Tim getting everything?
I want to make sure he's all right if I die.
I'm sorry, I didn't get any of that.
He said he wants to make sure I'm all right if he dies.
Tim, your will is, made out similarly.
It is.
So if John dies first, you inherit his belongings. And let's say you die a month later, everything goes to your family. I don't think that's fair. I put John through school and college, and I think I deserve half.
In the cafeteria, Bob produces a list written on an envelope from within his jacket pocket.
Who owns the television and the video?
John pulls the envelope towards him and begins to write initials beside the listed items.
And the bed?
There are some things we bought together. Can I have a look?
Tim takes the pen and envelope from John.
Just trying to remember who bought the Vegemite last. It was probably you, John.
Yes, you go through it.
It's my lungs to laugh. I'm sorry. The boy videos. Your family would enjoy Frisky Pool Party 7.
That's right. Tim, the car isn't yours.
No, but I need it.
John told Lois that you had to have a scan.
Did he now?
For your eyes.
My eyes are fine.
Something in your brain.
No, that's not right. I'm on medication. I am allowed to drive.
I'm sorry, John. I helped pay for that car. I would like it to come back to Melbourne, please.
Tim stares at Bob, then turns to John, who nods. Tim scratches out his name from beside the item listed car.
Might find something to eat.
Got some little red dots to mark up the apartment.
Some things are only fair.
You're telling people I have cancer. It's AIDS, Dad. The cancer is from AIDS.
Well, that's something you're going to have to take up with your mother.
I'm taking it up with you. I'm not ashamed of what I have.
Bob walks away from the table. Tim stares proudly at John. Day. Wheeling an oxygen can along with him and a sweater draped over his shoulders, John enters their apartment. Tim follows with bags full of John's belongings. Putting the bags on the floor, Tim closes the front door as John enters the bedroom. Standing by the bed, John faces the window and closes his eyes as the sun falls on his thin face. Tim wraps his arms around him from behind and kisses his shaven head.
Say, I may be gone today.
John slowly turns around and looks up at the taller Tim. Tim runs his hands over the stubble on John's head. Holding John's face gently, Tim gazes into his eyes, then kisses him. Tim removes the sweater from around John's shoulders and drops it, then hugs John warmly.
What are you trying to tell me? You will stay here for.
Keeping his eyes locked on Tim, John sits on the bed. Tim steps closer to John and holds him by the shoulders.
Oh, you screw me.
Tim takes John's upturned face in his hands, avoiding the oxygen tube around his ears. He raises John's face more, then bends and lovingly kisses John on the lips. A bare-chested John helps Tim get out of his T-shirt. He leans his forehead against Tim's chest, then wraps his arms around Tim's buttocks. Tim holds John and rests his cheek on John's head. John slowly unbuttons Tim's jeans. John slowly lies on his back as Tim bends over him, his jeans hanging below his hips. The men kiss lovingly. Then Tim carefully moves the tube of oxygen away from over John's torso. Look away, just turn the other way. Tim uses his teeth to rip open a condom pack. Tim holds John tightly around the waist as John lies straddled on top of him. John closes his eyes, then lies down over Tim, who gently kisses John's lips. I cannot wipe my brow. Was not a dream. At the Callio home, Lois picks up a Christmas angel from its box. She hands it to John, who stands beside the tree. Dressed in a sweatshirt and woolen beanie, John climbs on a small stepladder. Was a tear forever and near. Lois closes the box and carries it to the adjoining room. Lips blue, John places the angel on top of the tree, its silver tinsel hair hanging down the back of her white dress. As Lois gathers strings of tinsel, her back to John, John falls backwards on the couch and a bauble smashes to bits on the ground. Lois swings around. A framed photograph of John as a boy with a footy in his hand stands on a shelf. At the hospital, Tim rushes through a corridor looking for John's room. He finds Lois hanging Christmas decorations on the wall behind John's head. Lois turns as Tim enters. John lies on the bed, a mask over his nose and mouth.
I can't kiss you. You got this thing on your face.
How's he doing?
This is Peter. He helped resuscitate John.
Hey, Tim.
Peter. Hey.
You know each other?
From the gay group at uni.
An oxygen mask
We've
over his nose and mouth.
Who's from Gaysa? Are you here now?
Dressed in a nurse's uniform, Peter looks away.
Tim, have you eaten?
I'm good.
This is Callia? Well, we're not supposed to, but I could have a word to the kitchen.
Oh, fine. Thanks.
A middle-aged man's emaciated form lies on the bed beside John's. Tim looks away from the man's gaze. At the Callio home, Tim waits outside as Bob opens the door.
Tim, I thought Lois had...
I offered. Just got to grab something for John from under the tree.
Right. Come in. Come in. I'll help you. I wrap most of them.
I'm just after the one from John to me.
Bob watches as Tim walks to the Christmas tree in the living room. On the road, Tim drives John's car with Bob beside him. They stop to let children dressed for a Christmas play cross the street.
The funeral will be held at a church here in Melbourne. And we don't want people making statements.
You mean about AIDS?
And the whole... gay thing. Everybody knows anyway. No need.
You know that's against John's wishes. Be it on your conscience.
Such a tragedy. How did this happen?
Wearing fairy wings on his back, Peter closes the glass door of an empty staff room in the hospital. He waves to Tim and John, then leaves. Seated at a table, John slowly tries to open a gift. Then Tim reaches over and rips the wrapping apart. Tim throws the wrapping paper away as John studies his gift. John gently lifts a sheet of paper off the object and presses his fingers to soft brown cloth. Tim impatiently overturns the object.
It's a stable table. So you can eat in front of the team.
Better than the pajamas Mum got me.
Tim bites into the pastry he placed on the stable table, then opens a gift wrapped in red paper and black ribbons.
So
gonna keep the wrapping.
Eyes on John, Tim theatrically chucks the wrapping paper away, then opens the box.
Darling. What on earth is it? It's a document holder for writing. It's got a little motorized clamp that moves up and down when you use the foot pedal. It's bizarre. You don't like it?
It's good. I just don't know that the clamp is all that useful.
You always have to tell the truth, don't you, Timothy?
Tim puts the mechanized document holder into its box.
It's for when you're right.
Tim looks at John, then leans in closer. Tim gazes into John's eyes.
I'll use it. I promise.
He kisses John lightly on the lips and smiles. Tim leans back in his chair, then looks at the torn paper on the table. He picks up the black ribbon and hangs it around his neck.
The first present you ever gave me was wrapped in Essendon colours.
Sounds right.
Brian Ferry's Let's Stick Together.
How do you remember that?
I remember everything. You said you saw him on Countdown and he made you feel a bit sweaty.
Did I? What a poof.
Tim gently rubs John's shoulder. Teary-eyed, Tim gazes at a tired-looking John.
You okay hearing that?
Tim nods.
No!
Tears roll down Tim's cheeks.
I'm not ready for you to go.
We've said our goodbyes. Haven't we?
Squatting on the floor, Tim takes John's face in his hands.
You can't go without me at your side.
They touch foreheads.
That's the deal.
John slowly raises his face and plants a kiss on Tim's forehead. Night. Lois dozes on a chair in John's hospital room as Tim lies on a trundle bed.
John, we're trying to sleep.
Tim sits up and picks up a glass from the floor.
He was my favourite. I'm not supposed to say it. All my boys are wonderful, but he was my favourite. Never a problem.
A large lesion marks the corner of John's lips.
Lois, do you mind if I have a moment with John?
Lois slowly gets off her chair.
I ought to stretch my legs at any rate.
Lois leaves the room and Tim lies down in a small space beside John on the bed. Putting an arm gently around John, Tim lays his head on John's pillow. A flashback of a teenage John dressed in his school uniform and talking with his friends plays out as Tim speaks.
the schoolyard. I noticed the boy. Just listening to his friends, his hands in his pockets. Smiling. What is it about his face? In class. Lined up my books and tightened pencil case. And watched the door. Then he walked in. The boy with the amazing eyelashes. John Callio was in my class.
Day. Tim talks with a priest as they walk through the hospital gardens.
I want you to know I'll do my best to include you when it's time for the funeral. I'll talk about you as his friend. Are you happy with that?
We have been together for 15 years. He is my husband.
There'll be nothing gained by further alienating the parents.
Why? So they can reclaim him from the dirty poofter who corrupted him?
Peter rushes out.
Tim.
Tim leaps over a bush and rushes into the hospital. A smoking cigarette butt falls on the grass. He runs into the room. Bob and Lois sit on either side of the bed. Tim squeezes in behind Bob's chair to stand by John's head. Peter joins them. Tim leans close to John's ear. John breathes with his mouth wide open. Bob stands to wipe the trickle of drool falling from John's mouth. Bob leans over and kisses his son's head, then sits down as Lois prays the rosary. Lois turns to look at her son. Tim looks up at Peter, who stands by the foot of the bed. Peter hangs his head. Peter takes slow steps around Lois's chair and stands beside the bed. Lois releases John's arm. Peter bends and gently places a hand on John's shoulder. The other hand he places on John's wrist and checks for a pulse. Tim glances at Peter. Later, Tim sits on a chair in the corridor. At the funeral, Xavier prefects walk in the processional. Dressed in their ceremonial robes, John's elderly teachers follow. A footy sits on the coffin amongst the flowers.
I rode.
dressed in dark suits. John's younger brothers, now grown men, stand beside their parents. Pepe, Biscuit and other school friends of Tim's stand amongst the pews.
We're here to mourn the loss of our dear John. Our hearts go out to his father, Bob, his mother, Lois, and his brothers, Michael, Paul, Chris, and Anthony. And then to his friends, Tim and Peter, who were such a wonderful support to him in the last few months.
Day. In Italy, Tim sits at a table surrounded by vines and writes.
I am writing this from the garden at the back of my hotel, surrounded by orange trees and bougainvillea.
Carrying a backpack, Tim strolls down a road by the sea. In Melbourne, Pepe moves the phone receiver from one ear to another.
I visited the island of Selene yesterday, the island where your grandparents were born. It was a bit like a private pilgrimage. The cafe is only open for an hour. You can understand why they emigrated.
Pronto?
Is it Timothy Conagrave staying at your hotel?
Tim Conagrave, il ragazzo australiano.
Tim goes for a swim.
Could I leave a message for him?
Sì, un momento.
He floats on his back.
Here on Lipari is where I most miss you. I think you would have loved this place. It's warm and very strong.
Signor Conigrave! Signor Conigrave! Signor Conigrave!
Tim looks towards the shore on hearing the voice. He swims back to the shore and wades to the beach, where a waiter hands him an envelope. He watches the waiter leave, then opens the note. Written on hotel stationery is a single line. John was beside you. Tim smiles broadly.
There is a beautiful boy who works at the hotel here. He occupies my dreams.
At the hotel, Tim chats with a young waiter.
But that is just misdirected need for you.
Unbuttoned shirt flying in the breeze, Tim rides a scooter.
You're a hole in my life. A black hole. Anything I place there cannot be returned. I miss you terribly.
In a hospice room, Tim sits by a window and stares outside. Captions on screen read, Tim Conagrave completed Holding the Man, the story of his life with John Callio in October 1994. He died 10 days later. He was 34. White shirt unbuttoned, Tim rides his scooter under the Mediterranean sun on a road beside the sea.
Ci vedremo lassù. Angelo.
Tim closes his eyes as he cruises down the road. Photographs of the actors playing the roles in the film are stuck in an album. Ryan Corr, Craig Scott, Kerry Fox, Camilla R. Kinn, Sarah Snook, with Guy Pearce and Anthony LaPaglia. Photographs of the actors playing John and Tim are stuck on a page of the album. They morph into the pictures of the real John and Tim as teenagers. Directed by Neil Armfield, produced by Carly Dufresne. Screenplay by Tommy Murphy. Based on the book Holding the Man by Timothy Conagrave. Executive producers Cameron Wang, Rosemary Blight, Ben Grant, Tristan Wally, Andrew Mackey, and Richard Payton. Associate producer Tommy Murphy. Director of photography Jermaine McMicking. Editor Danny Cooper, ASE. Composer Alan John. Production designer Joe Ford. Costume designer Alice Babbage. Hair and makeup designer Fiona Rees-Jones. Casting Nikki Barrett, CSA and Natalie Wall. Cast in order of appearance: Tim Conagrave, Ryan Corr, Pepe Trevor, Sarah Snook, John Callio, Craig Scott, Eric, Lee Cormy, drama teacher, David Woods, Prue, Pia Grace Moon, Gina, Tegan Higginbotham, Dirge, Joshua Burton, Father Walbridge, Andrew S. Gilbert, Paul Callio at 15 years, Mason Viola. Bob Callio, Anthony LaPaglia, Lois Callio, Camilla Arkin, Mary Gert Conagrave, Kerry Fox, Dick Conagrave, Guy Pearce. Biscuit, Thomas Hatchman, Father O'Malley, Brian Lipson, Anna Conagrave, Tessa DeJocelyn, Nick Conagrave at 14 years, Caleb McClure, Richard, Luke Mullins, Veronica, Neri Dawn Fair, Woody, Nick Masters, Peter, Tom Hobbs, Barry, Jeffrey Rush, Nick Conagrave, Alex Given, Pleuridesis Doctor, Marco Chappie, Dr. Sam, Marcus Graham, Father Woods, Paul Goddard. Holding the Man by Timothy Conagrave, available through Penguin Group, Australia. The stage adaptation of Holding the Man, directed by David Berthold, written by Tommy Murphy, was first produced by Griffin Theatre Company. Australasian distributor, Transmission Films. International sales by Gold Coast Film.
I've been counting down since you've been gone. Some days are harder, harder than the rest. Just remember, it's me you might forget.
Financed in association with Fulcrum Media Finance Media Super. Financed in association with Snow Republic. Financed and developed in association with Screen New South Wales. Principal investor, development and production, Screen Australia. Copyright 2015 HTM Film Holdings, Film Victoria, Screen New South Wales and Screen Australia. Audio description provided by CSI Australia. Spoken by Liz Birch.
An open ticket, that was all you said. Thousand reasons running through my head. Everyone is sure to make you stay. Hey, baby, you know it don't work that way. Now, love's gonna bring you home, bring you home.
phone. I've been counting down since you've been gone. I'm not the type of guy who keeps it locked away, no. So come on, listen to what I say. Our love is gone. Yeah. Do what you wanna do. I wouldn't stop you now.
A photograph of the real Tim and John appears with Tim's interview. In the photo, the men are dressed in shorts and John has his arm around Tim's shoulder.
I mean, the only thing I had to live for is these two things that I'm writing, which I'd like to finish both of. One's a play and the other one is the book that I'd like to write about my lover and I, which I've started. And the other thing too is I suppose I've been expecting to be dead for so long that, I mean, almost now the idea of getting to something like 40 would be just like... But, yeah. I think that might be the end, is it not?